And welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes. You can interact with us on the program here at 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. We'll get to your phone calls. We'll get to your tweets in a little bit. We are going to discuss some of the free agent additions for the Giants. Yesterday, they made it official. They have added DJ Fluker from the San Diego Chargers, who played both right tackle and right guard. And we'll have a radio commentator, Mike Costa, from the San Diego area, who's followed the Chargers over the last few seasons to provide some insight on DJ Fluker. That's all coming up. But we want to start the program off, Paul, promoting, within the theme of the NCAA tournament starting later this week, the Giants do an annual tradition of putting together their own bracket, and this year's theme is dealing with draft classes and the schools that a number of these players came from. So if you go to giants.com/bracket, you'll see the entire layout of the bracket. The competition is going to get underway this week with round one, then we'll have round two, the semifinals and the finals, and you have a number of marquee matchups, and I think this is a great way to put in perspective where a number of the Giants' top prospects, the schools they're associated with, which maybe you tend to forget once they get embedded in the NFL.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt that you've got a lot of alums from big football schools who are going to recognize a bunch of these guys. But I think there'll be some of you who are surprised at some of the smaller schools that have produced some very important players in Giants history. You know, for example, you look at Texas Southern. Well, I know because right away, Homer Jones and Michael Strahan come to mind. That's only because I know those guys so well. There are a lot of folks out there in Giant Land who probably don't know Texas Southern. Maybe they know them from the basketball team, which I think has made the tournament once or twice. But I think they were one-time Division II school.
I believe so.
Who then moved up the ranks. You wouldn't really think of them as producing, you know, all-time Giants greats, but you'd have a hard time arguing those two guys not being marquee players, because they are. So that's the kind of thing that's really fun about this thing. And, of course, Morehead State, everybody knows because Phil Sims was the big Morehead State pick. And, you know, I don't know that anybody else knows Morehead State, again, outside of maybe some basketball teams that they've had, which have done some decent things. But that's what's so fun about this. It's even more fun to me to look at some of the schools. And when you click on the school logos, you'll see the guys who they are nominating for the bracket challenge from that particular school and why you're going to have to figure things out. I think it's almost more fun to do that than it actually is to vote, because
Correct.
It's like, oh, yeah, that guy came from there. I didn't know that. I'll say this, though. Mike Mayock's missing from Boston College. I mean, does it get any better than Mike Mayock? Draft guru from NFL Network. Does it get any better? But he's not on the Boston College logo.
Well, you have to have certain ties where you put the pads on and you contribute to the
Giants.
He was
a decent
so
special teams player for a season.
I'm just saying that
before he got hurt.
I think the focus, though, for this bracket is trying to maybe give you some of the household names. And connected to Boston College, by the way, Chris Snee and Matthias Kiwanuka, the two players
Absolutely.
That are listed under the BC umbrella. And they're going up against Texas Southern in the upper right hand of the corner, who Paul alluded to earlier in the program.
And actually, I think Mayock was technically picked up off the street. He was not drafted by the Giants, which, of course, is a requirement.
Correct.
You have to be drafted by the Giants.
So you want exceptions to the rules.
Well,
and I appreciate you like the obscure
guys. Mayock
is
a household name.
He is a household name now, but he's a household name, no disrespect, more because of what he's doing now out of the broadcasting booth than necessarily with the pads on. That's all I'm saying. You like, though, the under-the-radar type of guys, and I'm with you. I think they deserve some notoriety, too. But unfortunately, he did not make the bracket. So we'd be teasing somebody that you're not going to eventually see on the website. I want to focus, though, here on a second for some of the household schools. And the two that are intriguing to me, Paul, Michigan, as well as North Carolina and Notre Dame. When you think about some of the players that have come out of that program, North Carolina is in the right side of the bracket. Lawrence Taylor and Akeem Nix. I mean, I don't think you're going to bring that crew down. Given
that's pretty potent.
Yes, given your ties to LT and seeing that. Notre Dame, though, I think should also get some notoriety here. Mark Bavaro, Justin Tuck, and Eric Dorsey. It's not a bad trio either.
No, not at all. And it's interesting that pairing or that trio is matched up against Ole Miss, which is Eli Manning. You mentioned moments ago, North Carolina is matched up against Morehead State with Phil Sims. So both
of
those
quarterbacks are on an island.
Are matched up against the island of quarterbacks. I think to me, the one that's really hard is Michigan at USC, where you have Gifford, Gary Jeter, and Steve Smith from USC. And quite frankly, you could probably throw Terrell Thomas into there too. you know, who,
that's another good one.
Who really, you know, had some couple of really good years here till he got hurt.
Yeah.
And Michigan, you know, we're listing Toomer, Mattingham, and Jumbo Elliott. Certainly nothing to sneeze at there.
That's why I said Michigan, Notre Dame, and North Carolina to me are the three schools just to have an opportunity to peruse this bracket. A lot of intriguing matchups. It's a nice learning tool, as Paul mentioned earlier, much more so than maybe getting into the competition of picking who the winners or the losers are, just to see over the course of Giants history what schools these players have come out of. So you can check out Giants.com/bracket for more information. First round is going to be getting underway as we speak here on March 13th. And for more information, you can peruse Giants.com. For more of the program, you could also head to our website here with Big Blue Kickoff Live. Lance Medow, Paul Dottino with you here for Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. We're going to be focusing on DJ Fluker a little bit later on in the program as we'll hear from Mike Costa from Extra Fox Sports Radio in San Diego. But let's start there before we open up the phone lines at 201-939-4513. And the Giants made it official yesterday, Paul. Their latest free agent addition is to bolster the offensive line. Now, Fluker was the 11th overall draft pick of the San Diego Chargers in 2013, which was, by the way, a draft class that a lot of first-round offensive lineman went all across the board.
He was the fourth tackle to go in that draft, I believe, right?
Eric Fisher to the Chiefs.
Jokel.
Luke Jokel to the Jaguars. Lane Johnson to the Eagles.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Fluker to the Chargers. Then 8 picks later, Justin Pugh joins the New York Giants.
Right.
So it was very top-heavy with offensive linemen.
Well, I mean, the bottom line there was that Fluker, as he was coming out of Alabama, and everybody who knows anything about Giants in this market knows that he was my number one target for the Giants that year. I mean, I was like crushed when the Chargers took him at number 11 because it was 8 spots higher than the Giants were going to pick. Originally, Fluker, when he came out, a lot of folks thought he would fall into the teens because there were so many offensive line prospects in that draft. In the last couple of weeks leading up to the draft, Fluker starts moving up the board. He starts moving up so high that the NFL invites him to the draft as one of those first-round potential picks that they're going to have on site. I knew right then that the Giants were going to be in trouble if they really wanted him. Because, you know, if you're picking at 19 and everybody inviting guys to the stage,
and that means
it's kind of dicey. Yeah. It's kind of dicey. And so he goes off the board to the Chargers at 11, and it was like, oh, man, I was really crushed. I was absolutely devastated. I was hoping that maybe if he dropped down within 3 or 4 spots of the Giants, maybe they could make a trade and go up and get him. But to go to 11 was never going to happen. And so Fluker went to the Chargers, and now he becomes available, and he's out there on the street as of last week, and lo and behold, he lands where I finally had wanted him to land all along. So, very happy to see him. I haven't seen him physically, but happy that he's on the Giants roster. And looking forward to talking to Mike Costa, Chargers sideline reporter now for several years. And so I think he probably knows about as much about that player as anybody else is going to. So we're looking forward to picking his brain.
Now, just some more basic background info on Fluker. Start off as the right tackle for the Chargers. 2 seasons in, moved to right guard as they look to shake up the offensive line. So he's got versatility where he has NFL experience at both the guard position, at the tackle position. Now looking at to where he can fit in with respect to the Giants, Paul, just to look at the landscape of the offensive line, John Jerry is still a free agent. He mainly played right guard for the Giants last season. Marshall Newhouse joined the Oakland Raiders. He split time with Bobby Hart at right tackle, and Bobby Hart also has experience at right guard. So I think if you're just to at least speculate, you figure, given the fact that Fluker could play right guard and right tackle, that's probably where he's going to provide some competition entering this offseason.
Yeah, you would think, at least based on the scenario that's been laid out in front of us, if John Jerry comes back, and I do think that's a likely scenario, it's then 3 guys for 2 spots. Hart, Jerry, Fluker, plug them in wherever you think they're going to fit. Now, Jerry's not going to play tackle. Let's not kid ourselves. John Jerry is competing at right guard. But Bobby Hart can compete at either spot. So can Fluker. So, of course, a lot of this is going to depend also on where Fluker's weight is. Now, this is a guy when he came out of Alabama, 6'5", 330, okay, was known as a road grader, an absolutely mammoth of a man, a power player, which is, of course, old school.
Oh, yes. Right up your alley.
Now, Here's the thing. During his career in San Diego, at one point he went up to 350. Okay? And that's when he was a guard, 350 is more attuned to being a guard than you are at right tackle because mobility becomes an issue out at right tackle when you're 350. So I'm curious to see where is he hitting the scales at now? Is he 330, 335, 340, 350? Where is he? Where is he going to come in at? Now, the Giants will open up their offseason program in the middle of April. That's probably going to be our first chance to actually see him and interview him and talk to him. I'm interested to see what kind of shape he comes in at. And then from there, what kind of shape does he get himself into when he reports to training camp at the end of July? Now, you know the Giants have always been very, very cautious and careful and very attentive to guys playing weight. That's always been the case here. And many of guys who have come to the Giants who have been rumored to or reported to have weight problems, the Giants usually do a pretty good job of getting those guys right around the number that they want them to be. We'll see. And whatever that number is, I think that'll give you a better indication as to where he's probably going to fit in. If he's a little heavier, he's probably going to be more of a guard. If he's a little bit lighter, he's got a real chance maybe to be the tackle.
Well, and it'll be interesting to see where the weight winds up, mainly because if the Giants view him as they want him to compete at both positions, Paul, it's almost like you want to find the middle ground so you can line up at tackle a little bit and also line up at guard. I don't know if you want to necessarily pencil him in at just one position from the start, especially if you want to take advantage of his versatility.
Well, I think what you want to do, first of all, you got to figure out if John Jerry's in the fold. That's first of
all. Well, but the thing is, even if Jerry's in the fold, I would say then that's more of a reason to line him up at both positions.
Well, if he's not, though, then you're maybe probably it becomes, leaning him more to guard.
And I will give you that. But I still say that perhaps if they want to move him to both tackle spots and see if he can maybe line up either there. I don't think there's anything wrong with that necessarily.
I don't see him as a left tackle. I do not see that. He's a right tackle or a right guard in my book. The Giants may have other plans. They have not said what they're going to do to him. In fact, his quote's on Giants.com. Mike Eisen talked to him.
Yeah.
They put up an article on the site over the weekend. He said, they told me they're going to move me around.
Well, and here's an exact quote. He says, quote, wherever they want me to be successful and the team to be successful, right, they'll move me around a little bit. Wherever they want to put me is fine. So he's coming into the team with the mindset, if they want to move me around, I'm totally okay with that.
Again, I think this is going to be a need-based decision. You know, if you need the guy at a certain spot, that's where you're going to lean his competition. Or if it looks like he clearly can win a particular spot because of his talent level, his ability, his skill set, the way he plays during the course of training camp, that's where he's going to land, you know? Need has a lot to do with this, much like, you know, David Deal would always come to camp and he wasn't always sure where he was going to be. And then it was like, okay, we need you over there. Start working over there because that's where we're going to need you.
But the good news in that situation was Deal was prepared where in the blink of an eye he can move to another position.
And that sounds like Fluker is too.
Correct, but that's what you want to lay the groundwork with in the offseason so that in the event something ever comes up in the regular season, guys are prepared. The other thing that I think is interesting about Fluker, very durable. 61 starts out of 66 possible regular season and postseason games combined with the Chargers. He stayed on the field despite the fact that he moved around. And
he was banged up.
But he played through it, though.
He had had a number of injuries, and he gutted it out, and he stayed on the field. And quite frankly, we're going to talk to Mike Costa a little bit in just, about 10 minutes or so. We're going to hear from him. How banged up was he, and how much did that affect his performance? Because obviously, he did not fully live up to his draft status with the contract he was given, or the Chargers would have kept him. I mean, you know, there were reasons why a team lets a guy go.
Well, he was given the fifth-year option, and they took advantage of the option. They picked up the option, which is happening with all first-round picks. You get the four-year contract, the option for the fifth, and then obviously the finances and things come into play. They ultimately decided to move on. But as you mentioned, Mike Costa will provide some more insight on the rationale behind that. With that being said, we want to try to squeeze in a few phone calls before we get to Mike Costa. So let's open up the phone lines, 201-939-4513. Lance Metal, Paul Dottino with you here. Big Blue Kickoff Live, Giants.com. Timothy is in Jackson. He gets us going. Timothy, what's happening?
Nothing. But I got a question. After signing Brandon Marshall, Reed Ellison, and DJ Fluka. The Giants will look to sign Jamal Charles, Zach Vine, Ryan Clady, and Nick Folk, and re-sign Jonathan Hankins.
Wow, that's a lot of players you listed off there, Timothy, and appreciate the phone call. I think from a financial standpoint...
How thick is his wallet?
I was going to say, from a financial standpoint, Tim, I just don't think that that's realistic, some of the players that you listed off on that laundry list, but they could potentially still go after some players at other positions, and, you know, Hankins is still out there, Paul.
He is. He is. And, you know, I still think that Jonathan Hankins would like to stay with the Giants. I have no reason to believe he really wants to go somewhere else, but the numbers always come into play.
That's the big thing here. It's all about the finances. And right now it's hard to say how much wiggle room. Remember, there's opportunities to make tweaks with other contracts, cut players. Offseason is very long and so forth.
I'll say this. In the last week, the Giants have signed three free agents, all on the offensive side of the ball, after they signed a bunch of guys to help the defense last year and turned themselves into a legitimate playoff team. Now, if you are player X, and I'm not going to say Jonathan Hankins, but if you are player X and you are a Giants free agent right now and you see what this team has done to improve off of an 11-win season, you got to be thinking, the arrow's up. This team is a bona fide contender. If not now, they will be by the end of the draft. I'll tell you that. So it's going to be much more attractive than maybe even you thought it was to want to stay at home.
It's understandable. It depends on the mindset of the player. I mean, that's only something that Hankins could determine in terms of what his priority is. But I also was going to add to what you just said, it's not a surprise given the fact that they spent a lot of resources on the defense last season, reaped the rewards, that based on the results on offense this past season, that would be the focus entering free agency.
You had to know that.
Yeah, I don't think that should really surprise anybody based on the trend. All right, let's hear from Kyle in Rye. Kyle, what's happening?
How are you?
Hi.
I just wanted to talk a little bit about the Fluker signing. And I understand, according to Pro Football Focus, he was the 67th rated guard out of 78 last year, opposed to John Jerry, who was in the top 30.
Do you want to do this or do I?
Well, you love the rankings, but let's hear Kyle continue
go ahead.
First. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Kyle.
He's already lost me, but go ahead.
Do you think they will be able to re-sign John Jerry as opposed to depth in the tackle position where they only have two tackles in Hart and Flowers? Well, Fluker can play a little bit, but they need some depth there.
Well, I think the idea that both Fluker and Hart can both play guard and tackle in this league, now whether or not you think that's really well or just average or adequate, whatever the case may be, the fact that they've played NFL games at those positions is a good thing to have. I am sure the Giants are going to add more offensive line help. I would think that John Jerry's probably going to come back. I haven't seen his name attached to any visits anywhere. I would think he's going to come back, and I would think the Giants are probably going to draft at least one offensive lineman. If not on the second day, maybe the third. But they're going to try to enhance their depth on the offensive line. I don't think there's any question about that. And the Fluker move shows you that they are thinking in that direction.
And also they're thinking in line with players that could play multiple positions, which is something that I've brought up in the past. That's been part of their MO. Not just bringing in an offensive lineman that can only be a tackle, but somebody that they can move around. The other thing to note is also Rhett Ellison, to me, is an extension of the offensive line, Paul. The rationale behind that signing.
The blocker.
So
love it.
That doesn't mean that you overlook the offensive line. Don't get me wrong, but by investing in a jack-of-all-trades tight end fullback is saying this could be our sixth blocker when he's in the game. That's definitely part of the thinking.
Think about it for a second, all right? Ellison's like 260. Fluker's 350. Let's just put him at 350 for the moment. Think about that poundage that they have just added.
The meat and potatoes.
On a third and one.
So,
what? First down.
Where is he going to play if we re-sign John Jerry? He was great last year.
You're talking about Fluker?
Did you watch John Jerry on running plays?
He's rated the
No, 20th. Don't quote anybody's ratings or rankings. That's a bunch of baloney. John Jerry, if you watched him, what you know is he is a much better pass protector than he is a run blocker. It is very lazy and foolish to look at somebody's rankings or gradings and to take that at face value. That is a horrible mistake that a lot of fans make. Do not do that.
Well, and Kyle, you started off the phone call, remember, saying that you wanted to see the Giants add more depth. So in the event they bring back Jerry, when you ask about where Fluker is going to play, the whole point then for Fluker is to provide competition for both Jerry as well as Bobby Hart, assuming those guys are penciled in as starters. So even if Fluker doesn't end up starting and he hasn't been guaranteed anything, you want to create competition. That's the whole point of bringing in other bodies, like a veteran who's been around the league in multiple spots.
Right.
Thank you.
All right, Kyle. Thanks so much for weighing in. Appreciate the phone call. Let's hear from Joe in Pennsylvania. Joe, what's happening?
Hey, good morning.
Morning to you, Joe.
Good, but I was burning. They're lucky they brought Fluker in, because I was looking what's happening in our division there, where Chance Womack was going to the Eagles for chump change, and we didn't even bring him in. And he's one of the best linemen to ever come out of Alabama, and I was burning. Then they brought in Wojcicki, another, I think he's Mason.
He was already there, though. Joe, he was already a backup on that team, and he started because of injuries. That wasn't a new one. That was just re-signing. Stefan Wojcicki.
Okay, but why didn't we even bring in Womack? They signed him for $1.5 million or something like that, and we didn't even bring him in. And come on.
Well, it's interesting, actually, that you brought up Chance Womack, because there was three straight Alabama players that were drafted in 2013. Womack was actually selected right before Fluker. Mm-hmm. Now, Womack is strictly a guard.
Yes.
That's his background.
Correct.
He does not have tackle experience.
Yes, but he's a
That's the big difference.
Like Paul likes, and he's a road grader.
So you wanted him instead of Fluker. Is that what you're telling us?
Oh, I wanted them both in there for competition for the price there. And I didn't even hear the Giants bringing them in. That's what was burning me, you know. So whatever, at least we brought in Fluker there. And there's something else that was happening in our division with the linemen there, and I want to thank Dallas there, I forget. I guess you've seen that Leary went somewhere.
Leary went to the Denver Broncos, correct.
Right.
Yeah.
And the other lineman waited till he left, and now their tackle or so said he's retired.
Doug Free retired, but let me just point out, they have Lyle Collins, who was starting where Leary was starting, and Collins got hurt, so that's why Leary reclaimed his starting job.
But now there goes their depth. So if somebody gets hurt, you know what I mean? One other question I have, that tight end we signed here, do you think he could stay on with Johnson? Or I think it was Johnson from the Steelers we got that got hurt last year there to play fullback and that.
Will Johnson was quoted as in a Star Ledger story as saying that he's being released. So you know, remember now, he's coming off the neck situation.
Yeah, that's
that's a risk. And if that's the case, that probably has played a part in it and why Ellison was signed.
That's what I was wondering there, Paul, or if we were going to keep them both. You know, I wouldn't mind picking up another one.
I think if Johnson was healthy, I would think that that's a possibility. But there's certainly a risk there, and it sounds like that may not be the case.
Now, keep in mind, that is an accurate quote from the NJ Advanced Media story. There's also a quote saying that the agent spoke to Johnson, and there's a possibility that even if he is released, he could very well return, depending on how the market plays out. So just keep that in mind. Nothing official. This is just strictly a report based on NJ.com and NJ Advanced Media. Yeah.
Yeah, well, whatever. And I, like I said, I wouldn't mind if we get one of them tight ends yet in the draft, one of the, you know, somebody.
Which I think is possible.
Absolutely possible.
Absolutely. Yep.
Right. So, hey, thank you. Go Giants.
All right, Joe. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in. There was a big run on offensive linemen, what Joe just alluded to. I mean, it wasn't just guards and tackles. I mean, within the span of a few days, Russell Okung, for example, he's now with the Chargers after he left the Denver Broncos. Matt Khalil got big money to join his brother Ryan Khalil in Carolina. I mean, there was a lot of money being thrown out to these veteran offensive linemen, Paul.
These guys all of a sudden, much like they drop off the draft board in quick fashion, they started dropping off of the free agency board in quick fashion. And it was like, if you don't get one now, you may just have to be shut out of the free agency pool.
Well, but remember, this goes back to the conversation I believe that we had last week, Paul, when we were talking with some of the draft experts and saying, what position do you think you need to address in free agency if you're not fond of the depth at a position in the draft. And what was it? The offensive line was the position that they keyed in on.
There was no question. When I was at Indianapolis for the combine, it became apparent to me that even the top shelf offensive linemen, specifically the tackles, received a lot of mixed reviews. These guys are not blue chip plug and play guys, at least not from the impressions I got at Indianapolis. So if you were looking for a veteran, albeit an older guy or a banged up guy who had a chance to be a plug-and-play starter for you, you better grab him because that may be your best bet.
Well, speaking of the offensive line, the Giants made it official yesterday. They have added DJ Fluker, who was recently let go from the Los Angeles Chargers, formerly the San Diego Chargers, and we're now joined by a man who has covered the Chargers for many seasons, sports radio host for Extra 1360, Fox Sports Radio in San Diego, and that is Mike Costa. Mike, Lance Metal, Paul Dottino with you here, Giants.com, Big Blue Kickoff Live. We appreciate the time. How's everything?
Everything is great, guys. How are you?
Doing quite well, Mike. Let's start, obviously, with a player that you're very familiar with now joining the ranks of the Giants' offensive line. Fluker started off at right tackle, went to right guard, so it appears that he has some versatility based on his days with the Chargers. What is he now going to bring to the Giants? And what position is he better fitted for, considering he's played at both tackle and guard?
Guys, I would say that it's probably going to be the right guard position. You know, he was drafted to where he was. It was general manager Tom Telesco's first draft. DJ came to the Chargers number one out of Alabama, and they had pictured him as, you know, maybe being that cornerstone for them at the right tackle position for, you know, 10, maybe 12 years if he stayed healthy. And he just didn't pan out as a right tackle. He was having trouble with speed rushers, and, you know, it just got to the point where he was becoming a liability at the right tackle position. And so, you know, once they moved him into guard and he had somebody more or less kind of protecting him on both sides, he became a more efficient offensive lineman.
What are the things that you think he's got to clean up based on what you saw with the Chargers that would make him a potential starter for the Giants?
I think his footwork needs a little more a polishing, and I think it's one of those situations where if he gets into a blocking scheme, you know, I don't know if you guys have seen him up close. DJ is Howie Long would say he's get out of bed big. He is just a big monster. He is a monster,
yes,
of a human being. And so if it's a scheme where he's working well in space, and I know, you know, in the trenches up on offensive line, sometimes you have inches, you don't have feet to deal with, but if they can get him into a scheme where, as I said, they can work on his footwork and they get him moving downhill, and they can, you know, obviously use him to pull as well, but him going forward and him going downhill is where he's most deadly.
Talking with Mike Costa from Extra 1360 Fox Sports Radio in San Diego. Mike, you alluded to the fact that they envisioned that he would be perhaps a franchise tackle when they drafted him. Things didn't necessarily pan out. I know that they picked up the fifth-year team option, so initially it looked like he was going to be on the books, and obviously I'm sure they evaluated his play. What, though, made him expendable? What was a bigger factor? Was it the money in your mind, or was it just the production on the field?
The production on the field, and, you know, when you draft somebody to be your right tackle, you're going to pay them a first-round tackle's price, and when they realize that he wasn't panning out at that position, you're not going to give him the money that you were giving him to play guard for you. And this was also a football team that is just cash-strapped. They had to, you know, they needed to clear some space, not only for the Melvin Ingram franchise tag, but to be able to pay their draft choices coming up here in a couple of months. But the most of it comes from the fact that his play just didn't pan out for what they were paying him.
I've read a lot of stuff about him over the course of the last couple of days, Mike. Seems like he's a good locker room guy, a good teammate, a good community guy. I'm expecting him to adapt very well to a winning Giants locker room that's coming off of a playoff season. What are some of your thoughts about what he brings to the table in that fashion? Because quite frankly, this is the kind of locker room where they've got tradition, they've got winners, they're looking to build on already a playoff season. I'm wondering how he's going to mesh and if that will not maybe in itself help him to become a better player.
Guys, the Giants organization is you couldn't get a better guy. As you said, community, fans loved him. He was never in too much of a hurry for an autograph or a picture or to stop and talk with somebody.
Could he fit in the frame of the picture, though? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, exactly. If you've got a wide-angle lens, then you're no worries. You're going to get you and, you know, DJ the picture. But always great with his time. Always a smile on his face. Continually one of the first guys in the locker room, the last one to leave. And he is a tireless worker. And another thing about DJ Fluker is that, you know, we hear the coach cliche all the time, play until you hear the whistle. DJ Fluker plays until he hears the whistle. And God forbid you're the guy standing around the pile and the whistle has not blown. DJ Fluker will try to separate your head from your shoulders any play moving downfield. And I've seen it many, many times on the sidelines. The guy always shows up to play and is ready to play.
It's interesting that you shared that story, Mike, because, you know, we're trying to speculate on where he may fit into the offensive line. And I know you said he's better suited as a guard, but, you know, the Giants have lost potentially a few free agents on the right side of the offensive line. And, you know, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it seems as if he'll embrace competition if they don't pencil him into a specific spot entering the offseason, it seems.
Without a doubt, if they, you know, if the brass pulls him aside and says, DJ, we envision you working out at the tackle position, and, you know, maybe in the early going, they do give him some help, either keeping a tight end to help Chip or a running back for that matter in passing downs, he's not going to shy away from it. You know, he's not going to look at them and say, well, I didn't work out as a tackle. I really want to play guard. No, you could say, DJ, we need you as a cheerleader when the defense is on the field. He'd say, no worries, I'll do that as well. He's up to the challenge 100%.
Well, it sounds like the kind of guy who'll do anything for you, and of course, we'll have to now. He's on a 1-year prove-it contract. You see, that's the thing,
yeah.
Mike, that I'm really curious about, because 26 years old, you're talking about a guy who's just coming off of his first NFL contract, and as you know, most players think that their second NFL contract is going to be a big boom for them. The dose of reality that he must be chewing on to understand that, okay, you know what? I had to sign a 1-year prove-it deal. I can't think of a better motivation for a guy who seems to want to prove everybody, you know, that he's a good worker.
Well, and, you know, he's got the Alabama pedigree as well. So he knows as far as, well, probably even going back to high school, too, what it's like to be at the top of the mountain in high school, top of the mountain in college. And he's faced with, you mentioned he's 26 years old. You're faced with the stark reality. Okay, I've got to go out there and perform, or I'm looking possibly for another line of work if I don't make it here with the Giants. So an already motivated individual will be that much more motivated to show the Giants he's worth the big, not the big deal, but the long-term deal.
You mentioned before talking about scheme and getting him in the right fit. Do you think that part of the shortfall in production may have been because of the scheme he was in, maybe the offensive line coach he was working with? Is that potentially any of what made him not be what the Chargers had envisioned?
Yeah, and I don't want to make it sound like it was 100% DJ's fault as far as the overall offense that the Chargers were the last couple of years. You know, he was having his struggles adapting to the tackle position. But we also have to look back on the fact that the Chargers' running game was almost non-existent. And even when they did get Melvin Gordon out of Wisconsin, that first year for him was a disaster. I mean, he still didn't know the playbook late into the season. Phillip Rivers is telling him where to line up. And so when you have that combination, and then, oh, by the way, you also have the combination of guys going down left and right on the offensive line.
Sure.
And so DJ may have been right guard one day, left guard in the third quarter of that game because somebody else went down. So where he was not able to get in there and firmly entrench himself as a tackle, yeah, he shoulders most of that. But a lot of what was behind him kind of dictated what that offensive line looked like and how they performed.
You know, I'm glad Mike just broke that down, Paul, because, you know, you and I get so many phone calls from fans talking about the offensive line with the Giants, Mike. And, you know, I think Giants fans seem to think that their team's on an island. But what you yes. just laid out is, and you can basically reflect on your experience watching the Chargers over the last few years, and I know it's been well documented, the Chargers have had offensive line issues. They've had protection issues with Phillip Rivers. They've moved guys around. You know, that's a big reason why the Chargers have struggled offensively in terms of not winning the battles in the trenches. And I think that relates to what the Giants are trying to work out too, Mike, where, you know, they've had some ups and downs. They've had some injuries, inconsistency in terms of the running game. But, you know, this is a league-wide issue. Everybody seems to be having these issues, especially if they can't stay healthy on the O-line.
You guys, they just ended up giving tackle Joe Barksdale a big deal. And I think last year Joe Barksdale had more tackles at offensive tackle than Corey Legit had at defensive line. I mean, it has been a disaster of biblical proportions. You know, one year Phillip Rivers is dealing with four and five different centers in the course of a season. They bring Matt Slauson in. He really solidifies that position. But Orlando Franklin has ended up being a bust coming over from Denver. They give Joe Barksdale the big deal. He completely goes into cruise control. King Dunlap starts fighting the concussion issue once again. So it's been patchwork at best. And you look at the Chargers' woes, you look at the record, you look at their offensive production, and you just point straight to the offensive line and realize that no cohesion is one of the huge red flags for this organization.
Well, and that's why sometimes it's actually really hard to grade an individual part when the whole unit yep. is kind of falling apart at the seams. A final question from me, Mike. I do understand that his durability has been a plus, despite the fact that he's had some weight issues and he's been banged up a number of occasions. He even had that one bug bite in his eye, which I understand he played with, even though his eye was closed. I mean, yeah. it sounds like this guy's a real gamer, and that, you know, even though he's had to fight off a lot of stuff, he gets out on the field.
He does, and he'll tell you it was a king cobra that bit him in the eye, and he was still able to go out and play when it was really a bug bite. There was a couple years ago, they told him, DJ, you got to lose some of the baby fat, lose some of the weight, and he did a phenomenal job of coming into camp in shape. We marveled at the fact that he actually had a neck where normally we had just seen this big giant bump where his head was. But, you know, he will – you guys, you're getting – like I said, you're getting a good community man. You're getting a great team man. You're getting a guy who laughs loudest at himself, will do fine in the locker room, and comes ready to play every single day.
61 starts out of 66 appearances between regular season and postseason games. So he certainly has proven his durability in that regard. Mike Costa from Extra 1360 Fox Sports Radio in San Diego, kind enough to provide some insight on what DJ Fluker will bring to the Giants. Mike, greatly appreciate the time. Thanks so much for joining
us. Thank you, Mike.
Anytime, guys.
Great to talk to you.
All right, so there it is, DJ Fluker, what he will bring to the New York Giants in terms of his position versatility, in terms of his presence. He said he was a mammoth guy getting out of bed, and I think you can see that just based on the pure numbers.
Pure and simple. Low risk, potential high upside, certainly at the very least, good competition. And anytime you create competition to a spot that has had its troubles, you're helping yourself. And that's what the Giants have done.
You know, the other thing that's interesting, and we don't know because we haven't necessarily spoken to some of the players since they're gone and working out on their own, but he actually has some connections to the Giants roster. Landon Collins was a teammate of his for 1 year. They were both on the
Correct.
2012 Alabama championship
yes.
game. And another one who was on the practice squad last season got bumped up late, Kevin Norwood, the wide receiver, who's also from Alabama on the Giants roster. He's another one that played with DJ Fluker, and he played with him for a few more seasons. So it's good to know he at least has some college ties here to maybe help him assimilate into the locker room.
Well, one would think, and I don't know this, but one would think that Landon Collins and him have probably had some kind of conversation
think, yeah.
over the course of the last several days, because I know if I were going to interview with a team, I would try to reach out.
Agreed.
And you and I both know Landon Collins has become a real, real big-time guy in that Giants locker room. And I could think of no better guy who I would want to sell a player on coming into my locker room than Landon Collins. I mean, he's always smiling. He's always upbeat. He's always energetic. This is the kind of guy you want to be around.
And another connection, which has not been brought up with respect to Red Ellison, is the fact that Craig Johnson, who used to be the Vikings quarterbacks coach,
yes,
was with him when he was in Minnesota. Now,
correct,
I'm not saying that that played a huge role, but it goes back to having the connections and the recommendations and so forth.
It can help you identify pieces of information that may not be at the forefront of that portfolio or that folder or even in the tape. Sometimes there are things that, those kinds of guys who worked with a player can know better or know more about than anything that's at face value. So, you know, that to me, that's always, not always, sometimes it doesn't work out, but most of the time, it's a good sign when someone has had a personal experience with a player.
And it can't hurt. And plus, another connection with Ellison is Devon Kennard. Both of them were at USC,
yes,
together. So you actually have two
who, by
players
the way,
that
has
were brought
spoken
in.
Very well
he has.
Them.
He has publicly already,
yes,
given his seal of approval because they actually said they've battled one another in practice all the time, which, mm-hmm, is understandable with him being a pass rusher, Kennard, when he was at USC. All right, let's reopen up the phone lines. Appreciate everybody being patient while we spoke to Mike Costa from Fox Sports Radio in San Diego. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat. We'll get to your tweets as well. We've got Ronald on the line in Georgia. Ronald, welcome to the program. What do you have for us?
Hey, what's going on? I got 2 points that I can take off the air to get some extra calls in. But I wanted to see Gage, your guys' opinion on the risk-reward as far as trying to take a risk on one of these other low-tier offensive linemen that's left in free agency.
Like?
I mean, I don't have one in particular, just in general.
All right.
But I feel like in order to do that, you might have to cut people you might not want to get rid of because of their value to the team at this point right now.
Chances are, the guys at the bargain basement level of free agency at the position now are probably not going to do anything more for you than a guy you could draft in the second, third, or fourth round of the draft coming up in April. Maybe even a late third-day pick may have as much talent as one of the bargain basement guys who are on the street this morning. So why not take the guy in the draft who might have some upside because he's young and he's fresh and he's new.
And you can groom him.
And he may have some potential because you might be able to coach something up out of him as opposed to a veteran who you already know what he is and he's going to cost you more money anyway.
And that's what I was thinking about personally. Now, I know a lot of guys rag on Eric Flowers, and I want to say he's in year three, and this is usually the year when people start coming into their own. And there's a lot of people, especially in the forums, calling for his head at left tackle. And if we do decide to go lineman in the draft, historically, those guys start at right tackle anyway, if they start at all.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of feel like even if we go offensive line in the draft at some point, you're still going to have Flowers at left tackle. And I don't oppose to that. I mean, there was a lot of pressure, but as far as sacks-wise, the sack number wasn't as high as a lot of other teams in the league, especially some other playoff teams, I feel.
You know what I love about what you just said? You've been listening to me or reading about what I'm putting up on Twitter because it is the third year that's the prove-it year. And I've already told people on Twitter, I'm done answering questions about Eric Flowers. This is his third year. Watch it and get back to me at the end of the season. And if you still don't like what you see, talk to me in February, next February. And that's just the way it is for me because the Giants' best option right now may be the in-house improvement of Eric Flowers at left tackle. And it's possible, it's absolutely possible, that he gets to be good enough that you don't have to worry about it anymore. He doesn't have to be a Pro Bowl player. He just has to be okay. And quite frankly, as I also tell people all the time, football is a domino sport. Nothing happens by itself in a cocoon or a bubble.
Yeah.
Every single thing affects something else. The Giants think they've helped to improve the right side of their line. They think they've helped improve their power running game. Well, don't you think that in itself is going to help all of the linemen ease up with their pass protection pressure a little bit?
Yeah.
Well, and Ronald,
I had a player that I wanted. This is not necessarily a first-round draft pick, but it's a lineman that I really do like a lot because I feel like first round, we need to go best player available, preferably D-line linebacker. But I want to say that Antonio Garcia out of Troy. I know he's kind of projected early second round, but do you see – Landon Collins kind of trade based on his potential. I'll take it off the air.
You know what's interesting?
Thanks for the phone call, Ron.
John and I got to see him at the combine. He almost looks like an oversized tight end than he does an offensive lineman. He's really thin and skinny. And, you know, offensive linemen like Parcells and George Young used to say, the elephants, the boxcars. This guy's not that. He's really slender.
Well, he's got tremendous height. He's 6'7".
Yes.
But that also reminds me of what we were talking about with some of the taller tight ends. When you have an offensive lineman that's tall, you have to see how far he could get down. Does he have issues with respect
does
to
he
that?
Have his,
that's the
his
key
weight
thing.
Here?
302 they
okay.
list him at.
At 6'7", 302, he does not have a heavy anchor. And that's noticeable when you see him. I'm just saying.
That's something you have to take into consideration. I mean, I'm not so worked up about he's coming from Troy and all of a sudden he should be downgraded.
No.
We've seen
if
a lot of players.
Can play,
correct.
Can play.
It doesn't matter necessarily the school. It's just the thing that jumps out to me is the height-weight ratio and whether or not that would make a smooth transition to the NFL. And as far as trading up for him, you know, keep in mind, you know, the Giants also moved down a little bit because of the walkie-talkie situation. Are they in a position where they want to all of a sudden package something and then lose out on a pick? That's something also they have to think about.
I would add one more thing to what the caller said, and I love the point he brought up about maybe drafting guys instead of signing bargain basement veterans at this point. There is supposedly a plethora of day two, day three backup potential or potential backup NFL offensive linemen. I got to get those words in the right order. Potential backup offensive linemen that can help you depth-wise in this draft. Like we said to many of our draft gurus when we were out at the combine, it looks like there's a bunch of third, fourth, and fifth round linemen who have make it grades but are not necessarily starters. And let's face it, the Giants right now, that's what they're in a position to do. It looks like they're in a position more to help the depth at offensive line.
I agree.
They're not necessarily in a position to go out and grab themselves a plug-and-play guy.
Well, and here's the other thing, and this goes back to what Ronald, the last caller, was alluding to. And I brought this up earlier, Paul. You have to look at how the market played out. Because the Giants, they're not just saying to themselves, we have to bring in bodies. You also want to get a good bang for your buck. And you look at what Matt Khalil got on the open market, and it's no reflection on Matt Khalil. We don't need to spend the entire show talking about his ups and downs and his injuries. It's just that if you look at the Giants, they want to try to give a long-term deal to JPP, perhaps try to bring back Jonathan Hankins, knowing that, you know, there's other priorities. You can't go then throwing all your money at a left tackle who's going to now eat up all your cap space. You have to see how you best can take your cap space and maximize the value of the players you bring in.
If you believe the Giants are close to being a bona fide contender and they've got, let's say, four shallow spots on the roster that need to be fortified, you would be making a horrible mistake by throwing all of your resources at one of those spots and then leaving three other spots weak. Because that's a good way not to win a championship.
You need balance. I think that's been proven for the Giants' case. All you need to do is go back to 2015. Offense was putting points on the board, some defensive struggles. You need a balanced team. Well, only way to do that is through free agency and the draft.
And to be fair, for many weeks, guys, I thought that Riley Reiff would be a good economical solution who would come in the middle of the financial structure of what the tackles were getting. Turned out he got some pretty good bucks.
He did. Well, everybody. I mean, if you look at all the tackles, Paul.
He would not have been affordable under the structure that the Giants are talking about, clearly.
And that's what happens because when you see the market skyrocket and teams who really need to fill their void on the open market, they say to themselves, well, now it's thinning. We're going to have to up our price for the guy or else we're going to be left with nothing. So everybody's in a different situation. But I think you have to evaluate how the market played out before you say, well, you know, they should have went after this guy and so forth.
Just remember, okay, a ribeye steak can sometimes be just as tasty when you're hungry. You don't necessarily have to buy the filet mignon.
Look at that, another food analogy. I'm just impressed that you didn't go the Italian route. I was thinking maybe a pasta one, and you went steak. I'm really proud of you, Paul. You're becoming versatile in your old age here. Very nice. Ray is in Alexandria. Ray, what's happening?
Nothing much, guys. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Well, thanks for making the call, Ray.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. First, I want to say that I just love the Fluker sign. I think more depth, more competition is exactly what we need, and especially at the O-line. I just want to touch on two players in the draft. I want to pick your brains and see if you guys knew anything. I know that last year in the draft, Reese went after clean players, people who had no injury issues, no off-the-field issues, things like that, less risky. This tackle, Ramczyk, I was wondering if you think that he would be a possibility or if he would be taken off the draft board based on, you know, whatever the criteria may be. I'm hearing that his health looks good. He's recovered well. But do you think that he would still be a possibility or considered in the first round for us if he falls to us?
Jerry Reese will defer to the medical staff before he even considers the player because it's going to be on the medical staff to determine what they believe his status is. And, you know, Ramczyk was telling everybody at the combine that he believes he's going to be ready to start right away, hit the ground running, and start at left tackle in the NFL immediately as a rookie. And that's great. I want him to be optimistic. I want him to be hopeful. I want him to believe that because that may speed up his process. But is it realistic?
Well, and also I was going to say, what top-notch prospect is going to go to the media and tell you, you know what, I may need 2 months till I get on the field? Who in their right mind is going to do that? So you have to take that for what it's worth.
I'm just giving you the report.
No, of course. No, and I'm not faulting you for that. But I think you need to at least put things in perspective. And, I mean, I would agree with Paul, Ray, where I think the medicals is going to be a big part of the conversation for Ramczyk to determine where he's going to wind up and perhaps if teams are willing to maybe take an earlier chance on him than perhaps him falling and being still around at 23. Because remember, every team did not go after an offensive lineman in free agency. So there's still teams that are looking to bolster their lines and they're going to lean on the draft to do that. And he is by far on the top tier, assuming he's healthy, of the tackle position.
You
don't think there's any doubt about that.
You want two questions for him besides the medical? One is going to be his level of competition because his experience at the highest level of competition is limited. So that's the first thing you're going to have to deal with. And then the second thing you're going to have to deal with is, even if he is fully healthy now, how much physicality did he lose by having to be on the shelf after that torn labrum? And is he going to be the kind of guy you can plug and play right away, or is he really going to be better off in year two or year three? As opposed to being an immediate impact guy, which, believe it or not, you know, a lot of teams, they need that first-round pick to, bang, come right out of the blocks and give them something.
Yeah, I totally hear you. I hear you. Thanks so much. That's some really good insight. One other prospect that I had my eye on, and I watched the combine from the NFL Network, was Forrest Lamp, who I absolutely love. I actually watched some of his games. Problem is that he's a guard. He played tackle on the collegiate level, but you know, when I see him, I think of the comparisons that everyone brings up, what's the name down in Dallas, Zach Martin,
Zach Martin.
I'm just thinking to myself, you know, if the Giants are comfortable with our guard situation, you know, with Fluker and with Pugh moving forward, you know, would he even be a possibility? Would he, even if he's a good player, would he be a pick that we would make considering the fact that we like our guard situation and we may re-sign John Jerry as well too, because I really do like him as a player.
Well, I think a lot of it depends on whether or not they do bring back John Jerry. I mean, we're speculating at this point. We don't know exactly how that's going to play out, but, you know, in the event that they have a void at right guard and, you know, maybe they want Fluker to compete a little bit more at right tackle, you may want to take a chance on a guy like that. I mean, I think Zach Martin's a good comparison, and, you know, people always fault teams in the first round if they take guys who then pan out to be guards. But, I mean, look at what happened with Brandon Scherff, and look at what happened with Zach Martin. You have two teams in the same division that invested first-round picks in guys that have essentially squared themselves away at the guard position. I don't think either of those teams, Paul, are complaining because they're both staples of those offensive lines
moving
forward.
And become all-star players.
So there you go. So, I mean, for everybody to generalize and say, oh, well, if a player is going to pan out to be a guard, don't take him in the first round, you have two examples within the division where those were wise investments. So who am I to then sit here and criticize those two teams for making those decisions?
And put it this way, he did a real good job at the combine of increasing his value. A lot of folks don't think he's going to get out of the first round. And I would say this, too. Just because he may be projected as a better guard, remember, Justin Pugh, from the very get-go when he was at Syracuse, I know he was projected as a guard, but he was drafted as a tackle and had to start out playing tackle because the Giants needed him there. That's not to say that Lamp couldn't actually play tackle for somebody for a year or two until he finally fits in, much like Pugh, to his long-term spot.
You know, and I'll close with this. Thank you so much for saying that. I'm all in on Lamp, and I would absolutely love if we drafted him, put him at a tackle position, and, you know, gradually work them into wherever he fit best. But, guys, thank you so much for taking my call. You guys have blown my mind with insights, and keep delivering, you know, great shows, guys.
All right. Thank Appreciate you. You tuning in. Thanks so much. Yeah, he's been a tackle at Western Kentucky. That's what a lot of people forget. We always read the analysis and we say guard, but you forget he played tackle in college. So if you played tackle in college, I don't think you could just eliminate him from perhaps maybe getting some reps there for whichever team takes him ultimately.
Look, David Deal, Justin Pugh, I can't give you any more of a better example than those two guys who most people thought from the very get-go Deal would be best served at guard. Pugh would be best served at guard, but both of these guys have played tackle successfully in the National Football League. David Deal won a Super Bowl playing tackle. I mean, I can't stand sometimes when people just box them in and say, look, they can't do that. Or just because they're going to be that eventually doesn't mean they have to be that right away. Sometimes need forces you to maximize the guy's versatility.
Let's head to a few tweets here before we wrap up the program. NY Giants now at Giants underscore now saying, I think Fluker being next to Richburg will help him out in terms of being with guys consistently on the left and on the right as opposed to what we just heard what happened in San Diego.
We heard the crumbling Chargers offensive line was a situation that probably affected everybody who was on the field.
Because that same Twitter handle points out a lot of Fluker's film, which he says he watched over the course of the weekend, showed the player next to him getting beat and him trying to help. And that goes back to your point, Paul. When you evaluate one player, you can't just do it with a narrow lens. You have to take into consideration the other dominoes that impacted that player's play.
Especially when you're talking about the trenches. It makes a big, big difference. It's one of the reasons why I think Snacks Harrison and Olivier Vernon became such a tremendous tag team duo for the Giants is because they both played off each other extremely well.
Here's another good tweet on the topic of the offensive line. At Not Sid, people seem to forget that a free agent has to want to sign with the team, which I think is a very important point.
Absolutely.
Chance Warmack, referring to who we were talking about earlier, who signed with the Eagles, may have wanted to play for Philadelphia more than the Giants. Or, here's another thing, I don't know how the Giants evaluated Chance
Warmack. I don't know either.
So, I mean, he may have not even been on their radar because they may have not had a good grade. I don't know. So you can't just assume that just because a player got a bargain deal with another team that the team that didn't go after him missed out when you don't know what the evaluation was.
Correct.
So that's a big unknown. It's very difficult to comment on that when we really don't know the true facts and so forth. One last one here as people covering a lot of different positional topics at Spain underscore man underscore 1991. I think we're missing a few underscores on that one. Would you rather have a veteran kicker or a young one is the question, given the fact that, by the way, Robbie Gould joined the San Francisco 49ers in free agency.
Aldrich Rosas is a very, very interesting kicking prospect. And for those of you who watch the show on a regular basis, I invite you to ask Jeff Fiegels about him. The next time Jeff is on the show, Jeff does know about him a lot. I've done a lot of research on this guy. I've done film work on him. I know of him. He has a cannon of a leg. Comes off ACL surgery, played at, I think, Southern Oregon or something, an absolutely small, out-of-the-way school, but he's got a cannon leg. Had the ACL surgery, came back off of that, had a number of tryouts in the past season, was with the Titans practice squad. They were expecting him to challenge for a job this year, but the Giants scapped him up first. And now it seems as though he's got the inside track on the Giants' job, but I wouldn't be surprised if the Giants bring in a veteran to at least compete with him in training camp, because it's kind of risky to just hand him the job on a silver platter.
Well, it's similar to what happened when Josh Brown was suspended for a game, and then the Giants decided to go the veteran route after it looked like initially they were going to have some of the younger options flourish. So I think that that's a fair way to see how things play out. And it's funny you mentioned that, because Jeff and I did a show last week, and he commented on Rosas and how he said that he's got a booming leg.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
That seems to be the quick analysis for him. That his leg is what stands out to everybody.
Try to find some video on him online. You'll see him kicking like 70-yard field goals. I mean, it's crazy. This guy just, oh my goodness, he's like bionic. It's crazy.
Well, that is going to wrap up Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. We certainly appreciate everybody for tuning in. Thanks to Mike Costa from 1360 Fox Sports Radio in San Diego for providing some insight on DJ Fluker. Remember, head to Giants.com/brackets for our latest NCAA tournament-style bracket, where you could look at all of the colleges where some of the top Giants prospects came out of. Now, it's important to note, Mother Nature is interrupting the plans for Big Blue Kickoff Live this week, unfortunately. There is not going to be a show tomorrow. Our office will be closed as a result of the impending snowmageddon, snowstorm, or whatever you want to call it, that is coming towards the New York, New Jersey region. Wednesday right now is up in the air. We will certainly keep you posted. Stay locked to the Giants Twitter handle. If you follow Paul and I on Twitter, we'll keep you posted in terms of the schedule. As of right now, we're planning to have a show Wednesday, but we can confirm there is no Big Blue Kickoff Live on Tuesday. Appreciate everybody for once again tuning in. We will speak to you later this week right here on Giants.com. Have a good one.